Welcome to Naturally Educated once again. I'm Tim Elliott, and as always, I'm here with Abdulrahman Alzaabi. Abdulrahman, how you doing?
Hi there, Tim. All is well. I have to get this out of the way. I've been, in preparation for this episode, I've been thinking about this saying, right?
Right.
And it's an old proverb, I don't know, maybe from the Greeks or something, that says, a society grows great when old men plant trees whose shade they know they shall never sit in.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
It's very deep. And I was just thinking about it. It's so true to what we're going to discuss today. It's just, you know, just thinking long term, thinking about how your impact today is going to benefit someone you don't even know in the future.
Yeah. You've probably encompassed the episode. Thank you very much for joining us for this episode of Naturally Educated. But you're right, actually. Because, I mean, today we'll come to the headline in a second because it's kind of a broad discussion, but you're absolutely right.
Exactly. I thought it's such a broad, encompassing, all-encompassing quote, and it was really appropriate for this segment.
Today is a huge topic. The headline, if you will, sustainable resource management, use and conservation of ecosystems. And what I'm hoping we're going to work out exactly what that means.
I'm hoping that too. You know, Tim, can you simply boil it down to us in a single paragraph? That will help me kind of get into it.
Yeah. Do you know, I knew you were going to set me up with that. So I prepared this earlier. And this is kind of like the overarching episode for this whole season of Naturally Educated. Right. Just for you, here's that single paragraph. Okay.
Thank you.
Sustainable resource management, use and conservation of ecosystems is this. It's using natural resources responsibly to meet our needs right now, but without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own. How's that?
Not bad. Not bad at all. So in a way, you're saying it's about taking care of the present and, in addition, the future.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, it sounds easy enough, doesn't it? And of course, it's not easy to do. Here's another quote for you. And this time, this was, if you put this into Google, this is what the AI kind of spits back at you. It's a multifaceted approach encompassing the conservation, restoration, and sustainable use of ecosystems, including land, water, and living resources. This approach is crucial for maintaining biodiversity, ecological balance, and the long-term health of the environment. I preferred your way of describing it. But the thing is, it's a focus on services from and to the ecosystem. And that's kind of a nice way to look at it. Taking care and responsibility for our actions, which all have reactions. It's a lot.
Yeah, you could say that.
I mean, there's an oft-heard phrase, although the amounts are generally quite different, but the Amazon's worth $14 trillion to the world's economy. And that's not the online Amazon. That's the Amazon, which sounds fantastic. But what does it really mean? I mean, how is that value calculated? How can it be derived? It's kind of understanding that.
It's really hard. I mean, $14 trillion. That's a lot of money. It seems to me that it's hard to get your head around that kind of money, Tim. It's unfathomable, really. Yeah. And it's even harder to know where we might be able to realize this kind of value.
I mean, it's an estimated value, that kind of $14 trillion. You know, the rainforest ecosystem services, natural resources. And it's a figure that's kind of meant to encompass the value of biodiversity, carbon storage, water cycle regulation, the economic resources, you know, things like, I guess, timber, minerals, medicinal compounds. But the real point is that there isn't a single universally accepted calculation of the economic worth, the total economic worth of the Amazon, nor for any other global ecosystem come to that. But what the figure signifies, it's like a reflection of the Amazon's importance, a multifaceted, again, importance, huge importance to the global economy and environment, and its positions as kind of like, you know, the lungs of the world. We hear that a lot. As well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, in a way, it truly is, right? You have this body of forest that provides so much for the world. So I'm really with you on that. So that's the context, right?
Yeah.
For our discussion on how we gain real demonstrable value from conservation whilst not having an adverse impact on ourselves, our families, our environment, businesses, cities, etc., and basically our planet.
Yeah.
And in order to continue to benefit, basically.
That's exactly right. I mean, you got it in one, Abdulrahman. I mean, how do we sustainably manage, use, conserve ecosystem resources? There's a lot to talk about. That's what we're going to try to encompass over the next, well, I was going to say 30 minutes. It might be longer.
Ooh, okay. It's time to work this one out then, Tim. Our guest today is the Chief Technology Officer at 4Earth Intelligence, a company that uses space data for the betterment of humans and the planet. Our guest is the brain behind the AI solutions and is the go-to guy for governments and companies, helping them create their geospatial and satellite solutions. Jonathan Hendry, a very warm welcome to Naturally Educated.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Thank you for joining us. Jonathan, let's begin by asking you about who Jonathan really is. Tell us more about you.
Who am I? I am interested in most things. I love learning. I love understanding things really, really deeply. But I also like pushing things to the limit. And I think if you were to ask me who I am right now, there's a lot of training for marathons and long distance events going on. So a lot of me links into that. There's a certain personality type, I think, that likes endurance. And that's probably a lot of me explained, frankly. So if you imagine really long cycles, good long swims, and a lot of running, there's a lot in that. But then kind of linking it into a lot of what I do, I love finding things that we're not sure we can do. Like they're really pushing the limit. That probably summarizes me fairly well.
Mm-hmm. Sort of a new frontier, an exploratory spirit, I assume.
I do like that, yeah.
Which actually gets us to the topic, which is your interest in AI and space data. Where did that come from?
Yeah, sure. I mean, everybody's talking about AI. And for me, I think the reason that I love the space data piece of AI is 1972, we got our first satellite to play with. And it was really coarse and it wasn't very good. And since then, it's just exploded. There's just so much that we can kind of do with that data. So we had one to play with then, and it was freely available. And now we've literally got, I think, 3,500 that we can access. And they're all spinning around at different rates, at different, so many different parameters. And what I love is we can take what we've done in maths and physics over literally 300-400 years, and we can apply it to space data. And then we can bring the AI side of it. And so we can create all of this data, but really it's that evolution of data into intelligence, into knowledge, into action, and do so knowing a huge amount. Not to mention, we can just stand on the shoulder of giants technologically from that kind of academic viewpoint, but we can also stand on all of this data that we now have over 50 years. So I find all of that unbelievably exciting. And the potential is just growing and growing as well as more satellites are launched. So I find all of that very exciting.
You're the right person to be talking to, would be my observation today, Jonathan. Let's see if we can harness your data capabilities, if you like, and get to today's subject on Naturally Educated. Sustainable resource management, use and conservation of ecosystems. Now, I need to drill down into that title a little bit. So I had a go at putting what is a huge topic, in fact, a vast topic, into what I hope is like a small paragraph. And this is it. In essence, it's using natural resources responsibly to meet our needs right now, but without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own. Now, is that a reasonable way to phrase what we're talking about today?
I think so. That big word of sustainable is cropping up in like every sector, every market, but also just people's lives. You want to be sustainable. So yeah, I think that's a fantastic definition. Great way of summarizing it, and allows us to lead into like all of these different topics, whether it's the tech, whether it's the policy, whether it's, you know, people, actual people and what they do and what they want to do now, but also kind of in generations to come.
To wrap my mind around, or maybe to expand on what Tim just summarized, I want to sort of develop a framework. So how can we sustainably manage, use, and conserve ecosystem resources, right? How do we ensure that ecosystems continue to provide vital services such as clean water, air, food, and biodiversity while supporting human development, economic and economic needs in general? You know, knowing where to start is really tough. It's generally accepted that there are kind of five key principles of sustainable resource management, right? I understand that this has to be in the broadest of terms, Jonathan, but can we have a go at defining each of those principles? The first one is intergenerational equity. What does that mean?
Yeah, sure. And a lot of people have tried to define it. And I think the easiest one word definition of it is just like justice or yeah, long-term justice, basically. What is fair for me to have now so that other people can have, my kids can have in 25 years and their kids can have in 25 years' time. And really, it's about going, I could take all of it now, and it could all be mine, but then there's nothing for them. And so that, we normally talk about dynamic tension or dynamic balance. And it's kind of going, we can take now and it will grow back, and that's great. Or we take now and it doesn't grow back, then there's a problem. We can take now and then we can grow it. And it's basically a case in everything we try and do, everything we try and build, every growth area, how can we productively do that so that there's this, I suppose then defining the equity. So when now we have equity in this thing, I like to think about things in pixels because it divides the world up really nicely. But if we use 5 pixels, five by 5 meter squares for a housing development, let's say, that's really good for 50 years, 100 years. If we don't do anything with that land, what's the benefit it's going to bring in those 100 years, after those 100 years? What are we leaving? So therefore, what's the intergenerational wealth or equity that's left? How do we make decisions about that? Is that sustainable piece? And that's the management of the resources we have. Yeah, I'll stop there.
That's principle number one. Principle number two, generally accepted, ecosystem integrity, Jonathan.
So when we now try and think about ecosystem, very briefly. An ecosystem is just something that exists, that is generally in the environmental sphere, you know, is a service offered by the environment. And then integrity is then the quality of that ecosystem, that environment. And it could be the quality, it can just be the size. You know, those two are quite important, two things to understand for you to actually talk about integrity, because you could manage one, or you could manage the other, or you can do both. So ecosystem integrity is really about the maintenance of an ecosystem as a service. Again, you can see how that links into our first definition of intergenerational equity, though.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, yeah. And the third principle is defined as efficiency and minimization of waste.
I'm going to be controversial and say that waste is not necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes wasted time is good time. Wasted time can be rest. Wasted time can be like fallow land. So we've got this balance actually of efficiency, using it really, really well, but we've got to define what it means to be efficient. If we're thinking about it in terms of that really long time frame or that really short time frame. So to be the efficiency piece is there. The minimization of waste then is saying, given my goal, given what I'm classing as efficient, how am I going to achieve that goal in the most productive way, maybe in the short term, but also the most productive way in the long term, the most efficient way in the long term. So there's both of those things. And normally we talk about what's the quantity of our consumption, what is recycling, how are we going to promote the use of sustainable resources as well.
The fourth principle is resiliency and adaptation. How would you phrase that a little bit more with a bit more meat on the bones, as it were, but in terms that we can easily understand.
People quite often, Malcolm Gladwell, in fact, for those of you who have read his book, talks about tipping points. And what he basically does is he says resilience is about extending your tipping point, or knowing when it's coming and making sure you don't get there. So if you're, oil is actually a good one. If you're going to tap as much oil out of a well as you can and do so really, really quickly, you're going to reach a point where it just dips over. The pressure's no longer high enough, and so you can't get oil out. And you've got to decide, you know, if we're going to be resilient, we do that slowly. You do that in line with external factors and external forces. And basically, that links into a huge other areas that we look at. So climate change is the other massive tipping point that we talk about. So in the Arctic, it takes a really small degree of change. They say a quarter of a degree to start the melt. But as soon as that melt has started, you can't really stop it. And so there's many areas where we can look at resilience. And then the resilience is kind of saying, this is the measure. So this is where we would say, here's the data to support your resilient measure. And adaptation is really about how are we not going to get over that tipping point? How are we going to therefore be resilient? What's the plan we're going to put in place? And importantly, how are we going to manage our resources? Sometimes that literally is just time and the amount we're choosing to invest in it. How are we going to do that given the goal that we're wanting to achieve?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And it's sort of that long-term thinking about how to make use of a resource for a longer duration, I suppose, if I can put it simply there. And in order to round it all off, we have principle number 5, which is the inclusive decision making.
Mm. I was very fortunate to meet some Bedouin people out in the middle of nowhere, and they were showing me how actually they looked after their livestock. And the first thing, we bumped into them by complete accident, and they invited us into their tent, and they just brought in a camel into the tent, and they were like, milk. And so we had some milk with them. And it was this amazing experience, but it was also a wonderful chance to actually say, oh, how do you look after this? How do you do that? How do you manage seasons? Like, grandparents even, how did they manage? And basically, there's so much that you can learn from indigenous or local communities. Again, we've worked with fishermen in UAE from, 1974, I think. And again, learning about how they fished, when they fished, where did they move? And it was fascinating. And just understanding the natural balance they worked in. And again, when we talk about sustainability, or we talk about how they adapted, but completely without control of the natural world, they were able to do so, but out of necessity, where we don't have to do so out of necessity anymore, not in a short-term stage anyway.
True.
And so their knowledge was vital in how we chose to manage project sense, whether it be fishery reserves, kind of the quantity of fish that they brought in and how that may have changed. And there's so much I think we can learn from just including local communities. And more in a more modern context, perhaps, what I love is talking to the youth of today and understanding what do they actually value, how do they actually think, and actually what have they been told. And again, their insights are incredible. So often we kind of put them down maybe, but actually they've got really good insight. And when you think about what they value, they know what they value. And so that's been brilliant. There's a huge amount there where we can talk about how to make decisions, looking at the past, looking at the present, and learning so much before we put our data hats on.
Can I bring out that word value again, Jonathan? You're well aware of the phrase, the Amazon's worth $14 trillion. And, you know, I guess lots of people have heard that. The thing is, it's almost unfathomable, that kind of figure. To my brain, I can't quite get a grip on that. And that kind of, in a weird way, brings things into perspective. How do you even begin to break down that kind of almost mythical value into something tangible, something we can all understand? How do we put context into the value of something like the Amazon at $14 trillion? What does that mean?
Such a key question. We're dealing with all the big questions today. I think it's brilliant. It's a really key question to ask, because not only does it apply to the Amazon, but it defines we can define it in soil quality. We can talk about our water resources. We can break down all of these problems into kind of first principles. And UAE's actually done a really, really good job of this. And we're finishing up a program of work at the moment and breaking down the whole of the UAE into, you've guessed it, pixels, where we've got grids and we can understand the value of, put a financial value on all of these pixels. And we do that going back to the Amazon by saying, what does the Amazon do? Looks pretty. It does have a medical value, but it also has this lungs of the earth value. So if we just stick on lungs of the earth, that's actually where that $14 trillion valuation comes from. And it's basically saying, if it wasn't there, what would the hardware technological replacement for it be? So that replacement value is really how we define that term. And again, therefore, it's dynamic. You know, like costs come down, the more we do something, economies of scale, but it helps us understand here and now what's the value of the Amazon. And so really we're able to say, well, how many trees are there? What are they doing? Therefore, how much CO2 are they taking in? Not just CO2, all of the other pollutants. And then that regulation effect of the whole globe, what is that doing? And we can look at the Amazon and say that at that kind of macro, it's huge scale, but we can also look at mangroves. We can understand the benefits they bring, if it's biodiversity, if it's all of these other kind of items, areas that it brings in. So what UAE's done is say, that's huge. Let's break it down. And then they've created 14 different things that we're going to look at. One of them is aesthetics. Another is tourism. And so just in terms of, for example, tourism, you can look at how many people visit these places. What's the purely economic benefit that is brought about by people visiting these places? Right, well then actually, if we take those areas, we can then divide it up and we can say, well, every tree has this value. So now imagine you're looking at building a bridge or properties or whatever it is. You're actually able to understand, well, it's not just the cost of putting it up, but it's the of those properties or that bridge up. It's actually a case of what happens when you remove the mangrove. What's the value of it? And understanding that is quite key, because then you create a bit of a financial account. So you've removed value. You've removed the mangroves and you've added value by building properties. The properties are good for 50 years, 100 years. The mangroves have been there longer than anyone knows. And so it's a case of really diving into these things and understanding them. And if we can do that, we can break it into these 14 categories, for example, but we can also look at throughout the earth, like atmospherically, what's going on. On the ground, what's going on? Carbon biomass, what's the value of the carbon credit or the biodiversity credit potential there? And then we can look into the soil, what's the value of that as well? So there's so many ways that we can deal with that, but that's how you start putting a financial value on an ecosystem because of the service that it offers.
Interesting. And the fact that you can look at it from a perspective where people can relate to it. Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but most people can relate to what the financial value of something is, et cetera. And instead of giving them some arbitrary data that they might not be able to relate to, this is more kind of bringing it down a notch and getting people to realize the importance of natural habitats and so on. You know, while we were planning this season, we realized that the topic of sustainable resource ecosystem management, It's a lot to cover in one episode. We could actually do probably a whole season of podcasts on this topic and barely scratch the surface. So let's see if we can briefly address the importance of ecosystem-based management here. So you have sustainable agriculture, sustainable forest management, sustainable fisheries management, water resource management, all these big topics. In simple terms, how do we change mindsets and or practices and encourage sustainable approaches as the norm rather than something special or something seen as an obligation?
First things first, it's really hard. Millions dedicate their lives to doing this stuff. And so it's really hard. And it's also, I don't think a simple answer that I can give is it's suitable. As you say, it's a whole season, a whole series, a whole whatever. But I think probably an overarching fair statement is it depends who you're talking to. Some people, giving it a financial value really is the right way to engage. And I think, for example, investors or investment in these things, that's a really helpful way of looking at it. And I think we've found that really beneficial working with the Ministry of Climate Change and Agriculture. That's the route that they've gone at the federal level. what we found is actually huge resistance when we've put that in front of other people. And they've said, how dare you? How dare you put a value? That value's not high enough. And other people are like, you can't do that. I can't have a value like that against what I'm doing here. And that's the right thing to do, right? It's the right conversation to have, because you're opening up the conversation rather than kind of closing it down. And so to do that in a robustly scientific way, I think is really beneficial. But it's not the only way. Like those people who say, how dare you put a value that low on that thing that I care so much about. Engaging with those people, it gets really complicated at that point, but engaging with those people and really knowing their story about why it's so good and why they love it so much, and then telling other people about it, it's brilliant. And you meet some really passionate people in that area. So how do we do it? Multifaceted. We engage with all of those people. And then I'm going to dive in and say, then it really becomes a role of those who have to make the decisions about those compromises, which normally we would use the word policy. And we kind of go, right, well, what do we really want to achieve? What's our goal at the end of this? And therefore, we will action this here. We will build property here, but we won't here. We will protect these areas, but we won't protect those. Those people have very hard jobs. They will upset a lot of people. They will please a lot of people. But at the end of the day, that's kind of the level at which we kind of have to work if we want to reach this sustainable development, this sustainable agriculture, forests, fisheries, resource use, resource management. That's probably the only fair answer without giving it so many hours and days of attention, which is what we do, or we try to do. But to keep it short, I'll leave it there.
It's so interesting that, because it's such an honest answer, because it is so incredibly difficult. It's the old adage, isn't it? You can't please all of the people all the time. And most of the time, you probably annoy most of the people. Let's be completely honest. That's just generally how life works. But you have to just keep working on it, keep breaking down the barriers, keep reminding people. It's a lifelong thing. You mentioned briefly your love of satellites and data at the start of this conversation, Jonathan. Technology has its place when it comes to sustainable resource management. Yeah, could you just expand on that a little bit?
I think I mentioned at the beginning, we spoke to fishermen, we've spoken to farmers, we've spoken to many who have worked over generations, and they've told us how things have changed. And the reason it has changed so swiftly is because of technology. So we can pretend it doesn't exist as a thing, but it's there and it is changing, and it will be beneficial for so many people. I think that's really the thing that I would stress, is we're here to really find the productivity benefits that these things will bring. Without going into detail, I think I would say the reason I love satellites is because they let us zoom out completely. They let us take a look at everything in equal parts. Mm. One person is not looking at and kind of may have a nuanced opinion of this coral or that mangrove or this water or that water. We develop algorithms that run through, and they are equitable. And therefore, they are as close to fair as we can muster, or rather, they're always becoming more fair. And I think that's why I really like it, because we can really zoom out and we can do this, what we would term master plan. We can look at everything. That's geospatial, and you can see from satellite. And then we can zoom in on where the opportunities are for real benefit, real sustainability, where there's problems that we can see, but also areas that we definitely care about. And so then we can zoom in, and at that point, there's other technologies we might utilize. There's the hardware and the kind of software pieces that we could throw in there. There's the real experts in that specific domain that we can dive into as well. So a nice example probably is where we can see a water leak from a pipe. Nobody wants that. So what we can do is at that national level, we can see, yep, it's likely to be here, but I'm only 60% sure. Right, we'll zoom in and use a very high resolution satellite, and then we'll see, yep, definitely happening. You send somebody out, how big's the problem? And you want to have that evolution of processes, that evolution of technologies to really understand the problem as efficiently and productively as you can to reduce the waste of water. So there's a lot of things that we can all agree on. And I think technology is very good for those problems. There's so many areas. If we just stick, if we dive into AI and we say, well, what are the benefits of it? So many people have heard so much on this. Yeah.
If you can answer that in this podcast.
Well, so it's an area that I'm fascinated by, and we've been in for about 8 years. So it's nice to see it's getting the attention it deserves. But really, it's just linking. It's finding so many links based on what it's fed. information on what it's fed being quite an important piece of that puzzle. But because it's got so much attention and so much investment, what is being fed is getting better and better, and therefore it is getting better and better. So in terms of like water efficiency, for example, it would automatically detect when it was seeing less water coming out of a pipe than it thought should be, because it can see what's going in. And so we can very quickly action these things. We can see productivity hugely increase, and the automated part of that. So it's then a case of, right, we now know there's an issue without somebody literally sitting at a screen watching a line go down. We can create algorithms. We do create algorithms to do that. So much more than that. So much more in that topic. But I'll lead myself away.
You know, I work in technology development as well, as an engineer myself. And seeing how AI has impacted almost every decision that we make in the development phase, from, you know, organizing the effort to getting actual results, is impressive. So I can only imagine how much impact it has right now and how much it will have in the future. And it's all to the benefit of society overall, especially in your case. So technology is one thing, but policy is another. From your perspective, what is the role of policy and governance in general in sort of pushing the agenda further in the direction of sustainable resource management?
I mean, it kind of goes without saying it's choosing the right policy and implementing it well. It's high-level summary, nice and easy. So much easier said than done. Like, so much easier said than done. But we run a few projects within the policy and governance domain across UAE. And for example, it's actually a case of going, well, where have people spent a huge amount of time thinking about this really well? And where have they implemented it really well across the world? And how can we do so here? And there's a really good amount of humility in doing that. And then there's also just an intelligence about going, well, maybe we need to tweak it. And so we work with some excellent, excellent people across the UAE in government who have really guided those decisions. But really, it comes down to evaluating and then implement it, see what goes wrong. And then, you know, we could tweak what we do, or rather see what goes right and make sure we keep that. So one of the ones that I really liked was actually we did a huge study on soil quality, which is an underrated topic in my view, because it feeds food security. It's everything that we build on. It's everything beneath our feet. It always has been. It always will be. It's just there. It's such an important topic. And actually, it was going, well, how should we think about when is it worth cleaning this up? When is it not? What are we happy with? What is a safe level of X, Y, Z? And we were able to use data from across the world. I think there's something like 60,000 different surveys and samples that were collected to really understand what was useful in UAE. And you can choose the most conservative, but actually it wasn't sensible to do that because the soils were completely different. So you choose an area that is similar to yours, you then dive in. So policy and designing the policy in an effective way is really important. But then it's also about, well, what's our end goal? What do we want to achieve? For example, if we're giving out licenses for certain types of development, how can we protect what we have? Again, we talked about intergenerational wealth. How can we ensure that that is kind of passed on to the next generation, or the equity that is built? And so there's also a whole piece around, when do we license? How long do we license for? And what do we allow them to do within that license to ensure that we have a sustainable environment? To ensure that we have kind of the right subsidies or the right tax breaks or the right kind of payments towards protected areas or whatever it is, just to kind of mitigate any damage or really build success stories in other areas. So it's a huge balance of all of that. And then in line with all of that, there's the international community. So when it comes to policy, there's so much support out there internationally, and people have been giving this attention for, you know, hundreds of years. So let's talk to them. And again, it's so hard because, again, you get your three people who are like, this is the value. No, it's too high. No, it's too low. But it is good to have that conversation. And it is good just to kind of compare notes and meet regularly, which is why the Paris Agreement, COP, the Convention for Biological Diversity. But I'm going to say IUCN, which is meeting in Abu Dhabi in October, coming together. So many people talking about so many different topics within conservation within sustainability isn't a bad thing ever. And so having that space really, really important for policy and improving governance of all of these different resources and associated management.
It's so important, and it's so good to hear you say that, because it really is, aside from IUCN and Abu Dhabi in October, we've been talking about that, but it's about sitting down and talking and thrashing these things out, isn't it? And it's also, and you've mentioned this two or three times, it's about community involvement in all of these things that will benefit, you know, community generations in the future. And I think it's hard to kind of overstate that, Jonathan.
Absolutely. And there's so many people that are trying to like design their own method to understand the same problem, to answer the same question. I sometimes wonder whether we should just get on and do it, or rather just share what we've got already to make sure that everybody's aware of it. And I sometimes wonder whether there's just lack of awareness there of so many different things. I think it's a real encouragement to know what is being done, not what, you know, oh, people aren't doing this, or we could do this better. And those are fine questions, but it is also just, there's some really good work going on and has been done. And people are trying to balance the priorities for so many people. And they do, they really do care. And they do a really good job of it for the most part. So, yeah.
That's great. And it's good to hear that, you know, it's because sometimes you don't see the background effort. You just hear of, you know, the conclusion, the results, X happened, Y happened. But the months and often years of work that happened in the background is just... it's just tremendous. So to begin concluding this episode, I would like to, it would be interesting basically to hear your thoughts. And again, this is a huge question once more, but your thoughts on how we can best find the balance between meeting human needs and preserving the integrity of ecosystems, on how we can adopt strategies that focus on efficiency, resilience, and equity. In addition, on how we can ensure that natural resources continue to provide essential services while conserving ecosystems for future generations?
Again, it's such a big question. It really is. But the I'll just say collaboration is huge. And then trying to balance priorities is just huge. And those things obviously come together. And it kind of is about the education and the communication again, though. Governments, businesses, communities, just people. Again, I say I love talking to the younger generations as well, because they've got passions in so many areas and they'll open your eyes to so many things you just haven't thought about. So I think it really is, collaboration is huge. It is also empathizing though, because people do want, need, they have jobs now, like they have things they care about now. And it really is about bringing that to the fore, just recognizing that that's there. Sometimes I wonder whether we are unsustainable because we're just worried and we're just like, well, if I have that now, it'll be okay and I'll worry about that tomorrow. And sometimes I wonder whether we should try and slow down and just kind of go, it's okay. And this is why we'll be okay. And therefore, again, that whole long-term thinking, the sustainable thinking, if we get rid of the fear factor, open communication, collaboration, and actually maybe it removes some of that short-termist thinking. But again, none of that's simple. None of that is simple. But if we can do that, if we can be really clear about how we show people that, which is why I really like, again, I love the satellite approach. So I'm just going to bang on about it again. But I love that zoomed out, you know, red, amber, green. You can see it all. It's really clear. So the communication becomes so much easier. The collaboration becomes much more easy. And you get people asking the right questions, even if they disagree with the red, the green, whatever, you get the right questions being asked and then the right action being taken quite often. So I think it's just that balance. It's just a really hard balance, but I truly believe we can do it.
It's a really positive conversation, this, actually. And I love the kind of geospatial aspect of it as well, because it's a really nice way to describe, to kind of get across that actually this is about all of us. And that's at the core of it, isn't it? It's finding the balance. Put aside everything else. It's about getting together and deciding, oh, okay, well, we can do that. But that's kind of what it is. It's up to all of us.
It really is. And I kind of wonder whether we should pull on the passions of a lot of people. So I think certain people are really, really passionate about nature, about the environment, about conservation, about restoration, or about building in the right way. And actually, they don't have to be separate things, right? So we can do it. If there wasn't that fear factor, I think we'd want to do everything sustainably. Nobody doesn't want that. So how can we link it into other areas, not just using the word environment, not just using the word resource management or whatever, but how can we make that part of finance? How can we make that part of all of these other aspects of life or industry or markets or whatever we're doing? But how can we actually link all those conversations in? Which is why I think the topic of ecosystem services is quite good, because we all use services. And they're assets. They really are assets that we have, and they can appreciate or they can depreciate, and we can decide which way they go. So that's why I think it's a really powerful argument to use the environmental economics to link it into everyone's understanding, at least, if not life itself.
Correct. I think you're right there. The final question that we ask a lot of people that come to this podcast is, from your perspective, how do you view the steps that the UAE in general is taking to sustainably manage the resource it has, basically to ensure the topic of ecosystem restoration efforts and to provide a healthy environment for future generation?
There are some brilliant people that I dare not name, but they are some brilliant people that we work with, have worked with, continue to work with. And they are not only passionate about what they do, but they do an excellent, excellent job. They really, really do. And I'm really glad they're in the positions they are, and I'm really glad we get to work with them. So they must be Marathi, which is probably something that everybody's really glad to hear. They've started, it's not even fair, I can't say they've started because some have been going on for 8-9 years. There are some really good initiatives that are long-term, and that is really important. And then there are some really good initiatives that are about to start or starting, valuing nature, valuing environment, valuing so many different things in various ways. And actually just meeting, having loads of people doing it in those different ways, speaking with other people who are needing to hear it in different ways. I think that's where it's really good. And it can all come together. And as a UAE kind of strategic priority in many, many cases, and feed into that kind of executive level of, right, we can now be sustainable. There's some really, really good things going on, and will be soon, I very much hope, going on that I can talk about and can't talk about. And a lot of those, I'm delighted to say, involve utilizing satellite imagery in some really innovative ways, which is bringing productivity, which is meaning that we can really transparently, independently monitor the kind of sustainability of so many different assets, services, including restoration. And go on, I will dive. Bit of detail. A lot of people always look to mangroves and they go, for example, they're really good carbon stocks. What UAE has done is say they're great carbon stocks, but actually they're not as good as seagrass. It's not a sexy topic, but actually it's the right way of thinking about big problems. And so they go, seagrass is actually something that we should be preserving. So they think about it, not just in the sexy way, but actually looking at what's real. What does science say we should be doing? What do the experts agree is the right way of preserving or restoring? So I think UAE does that really well as well. And the talent, it should be said, the talent that UAE has is very, very good. And therefore, they can have some really good experts advising on a lot of that stuff.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
We love mangroves and seagrass on this podcast. You did that so well, Jonathan. Thank you for bringing that up. Jonathan Hendry is the Chief Technology Officer at 4Earth Intelligence. It's a company that uses space data for the betterment of humans and the planet. And he is a geospatial data guy. It's been fascinating talking to you. I really mean that. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
And that is Sustainable Resource Management, Use and Conservation of Ecosystems, another episode in this season, season 5 of Naturally Educated.
As ever, we'd like to thank our guest, Chief Technology Officer at 4Earth Intelligence, Jonathan Hendry.
It's great to hear from him, you know, and it's great to hear from somebody that's able to take such a massive topic and kind of boil it down a little bit, because there is so much to talk about. I just kind of hope we covered as much as we could in the time we had.
I hope so, too. There's just not enough time to get to everything, Tim. But what I did get was this. It's about, quote, using natural resources responsibly to meet our needs right now, but without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own. That was basically the quote you used earlier. I've got another quote for you. It's a quote used regularly. I've got it here. One second. Okay, so I've learned this in my physics class, so I hope you appreciate this.
Okay.
So here's what Isaac Newton said, right?
Great.
For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction, right? As simple as that.
That's impressive.
And it's actually the third law of motion, but it kind of fits here, right?
It really does, and I'm really impressed. I didn't expect you to quote Sir Isaac Newton. Oh, by the way, one amazing man. The things he did by the time he was 26, just incredible. But wouldn't the world be a much better place if there was a little more thought about the consequences of our actions? And I guess that's kind of what you're getting at. And it's something that applies as much to the environment, to sustainable thinking, as it does to our everyday lives and all our kind of interactions.
Absolutely. You know what stood out to me about this conversation with Jonathan was his emphasis on looking at data from his perspective, and how these little pixels that he assigns value to, and he has the amber, green, yellow, whatever. The fact that you can sort of have such a view, and that view that is on your computer can impact real life complications, is just tremendous, and it's really impressive from my perspective.
It was really interesting. I mean, you take a much more, you're a much more scientific guy than me, so I get that, but you're absolutely right. But what I took was the way he said a couple of times, you can zoom out in the way a satellite does and look at the overall picture as well. And that's what we should also be doing. It's those minute details, but it's also the big picture. And I thought that was a really clever way to kind of illustrate that point, you know?
And at the end of the day, you know, just thinking about the environment in general, thinking about sustainability, it's about people, it's about the environment, it's about the air we breathe, et cetera. But when we say that, sometimes, you know, thinking from a from your personal perspective might not be sufficient. Mm-hmm. So thinking from a larger perspective, satellites that capture data from not only the UAE, but around the world, like we've discussed, the Amazon, et cetera, that just puts everything into perspective, and it makes you feel like you're one, you know, one mass body that you can connect to people from around the world and the difficulties they're facing as well.
It's a good thing to remember. We've got one planet. So that's the episode for today. Sustainable resource management, sensible, forward-thinking use and conservation of our vital ecosystems. I'm Tim Elliott.
And I am Abdurrahman Al-Zaabi, and that's Naturally Educated from the Environment Agency, Abu Dhabi.